This is Talking Business. Joining me now is Will Young, the founder and CEO of Campos Coffee. G'day, Will.
G'day, Alan.
Thanks for joining us. Now, you started your business with coffee in 1997, and Australia at that point, I think, was a tea-drinking country.
Oh, it felt that way, yeah. But, essentially, I think our brand was kind of seeded in 1997. Until that year, actually on that one Saturday morning or afternoon, it was a Saturday afternoon, I sat down at a table in a cafe, and I'd never liked coffee until that one coffee I was served. And this gentleman put down a coffee in front of me, and I went to put sugar in it. He said, just try it without sugar. And I thought, oh, fine. And I had one sip, and that coffee was so much better.
So what was different about that coffee?
Well, first of all, it wasn't scalding hot, so I didn't like burn my mouth, which is a big deal.
Yeah.
But also, it just wasn't bitter, and I just really, really enjoyed the actual taste of the coffee coming through the drink. Whereas until that day, I just thought of coffee as a burnt, kind of bitter-tasting, charcoal-y thing that people drank every day.
So this changed your life.
Well, yeah, it did. It did. I just got excited that I could be responsible for introducing people to something vastly superior to what they're used to. And if they're drinking it every day, you know, they're drinking coffee every day. If they're drinking a bad coffee every day, if it's just to get to work or just to wake up, that's a bit depressing. I thought, wouldn't it be amazing if everyone's drinking very good tasting coffee?
So what did you do?
Oh, I just immediately started researching coffee from that day forward. I ended up hanging out in that cafe a lot. And I worked for free for anyone who'd let me. And I watched a lot of videos because we didn't have anything to learn off. There was no internet really at that time. So I ended up, watching videos all night, hanging out with my other coffee geek friends and learning about coffee the old-fashioned way, which is just...
But you created a business. How did you do that?
Oh, well, then I just started,
Did you open a cafe?
I opened a cafe in 1997. And at the time...
And that was in Newtown, I think.
No, that was later on. My first cafe I opened in the city, in Sydney.
Oh, yeah.
And I learned all the mistakes that you have to learn when you open your first small business. And I overworked myself, ended up actually in hospital because I was working so hard because I really wanted to recreate that amazing moment for whoever came into the shop. But I learned that you can't do everything yourself. And ended up teaching people how to, I ended up really having to learn how to teach people how to make coffee. And so it was a training that I learned.
You called a barista in those days?
I think we were called a coffee maker. And barista was coming. Yeah, the barista revolution.
So I think Starbucks was coming in at the same time. How did Starbucks affect you?
Yeah, well, Starbucks affected us quite heavily at the beginning. I mean, my first shop was closed down for 8 months while there was a bunch of construction out in front of it. And so we went away for 6 months, came back, and they built the first Starbucks right in front of our store. And that essentially shut us down. And so I lost all my money and I lost my business to that first Starbucks opening. But then flash forward to 2006, 2007, and Starbucks had opened 87 stores by then. But unfortunately, they just misread the market slightly and didn't realize that the espresso market in Australia was so strong and people were so devoted to their local cafes and to that local flavor of like just a good tasting bold coffee that that Starbucks essentially had to close 65 of 87 stores in 1 week because they were just all unprofitable. So
can you take some credit for that?
I think I can a little bit,
because Starbucks never took off in Australia, really.
It hasn't taken off yet.
Not like McDonald's or something.
No, but it's got such a big culture. It's been in our culture since the Italians came back in the 50s and 60s, and they started it, and we just developed on that. But I think the work that we put in the early 2000s in training baristas and on developing the espresso market, making great tasting coffee where you could actually taste the coffee through the milk, I think that certainly hurt their chances of introducing this American style of coffee to the market. I think that's significant.
But these days, it's not your business isn't about cafes. It's actually supplying.
Yeah, supplying other cafes.
Other cafes with coffee, right?
Yeah, supplying other cafes with coffee and the training to make great coffee as well. Because if they're going to support your brand, if they're going to be sold the same coffee that we sold, I wanted to make sure that we're coming through on that coffee tasting the same as what it did from us. Which was a big deal. So we spent about 3 or 4 years researching how to train people how to make coffee. And by the time that we got to the end of that research, we learned that we had to make sure everybody who served our coffee had a trained barista, had the same machines as we did, same cups, silverware. Everything had to be the exact same as what we had in order for the final product to be as good as what we had.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what about the coffee itself? When did you start getting into the business of sourcing it from countries that might grow coffee into Australia?
Yeah, we started sourcing our own coffee around 2007. We started the Campos Coffee brand in 2002. And it took us about 5 years to realize that we had to start looking for coffee ourselves. And also we realized that we were buying a lot of coffee. And our impact at origin could be a lot larger than what we were doing if we knew who we were buying it off.
Were you roasting it yourself?
Yep, we were roasting ourselves, yeah. And we grew significantly in between the years of 2002 to 2007-8. And it was at that time that we thought, we've got to start buying off people ourselves. We got to visit the farmers. And so I packed my bags and jumped on every Qantas flight I could. And away I went, and I visited every country you buy from in 1 year. And we've done
how
the same
thing. How many countries
is
that?
Oh, at the time it was, I believe, 9 countries.
Right.
Yeah.
And so where do you buy from now?
We do a lot of coffee from Colombia, but also from Papua New Guinea as well. Kenya, Ethiopia, Rwanda, Burundi, Costa Rica, El Salvador, anywhere that's got good coffee.
Right. And where's the best coffee come from?
That's a tough question. Right now, the best...
I asked the toughest
question. I know. It's a hard ball. I'd say the most valuable coffee comes from Panama. And that's where the ultra-premium or luxury brand coffee is coming from.
What makes it so valuable or ultra-premium?
Oh, it's... there's this one certain kind of variety called a geisha coffee. And it's this one tree that grows coffee. It doesn't look particularly sensational. It doesn't look as beautiful as it sounds. It's a kind of spindly, not very good-looking tree. But it does grow this particular coffee that tastes remarkably like orange blossoms mixed with lemonade, red cherries, milk chocolate, all of these things mixed together.
You sound like you're talking about wine.
I know. That's exactly it. And that's where it's going. I tell you, I think in the next we're buying a lot of that coffee right now. But I think in the next 2 to 5 years, this coffee will be so valuable, it'll be out of reach for anyone who's not uber wealthy.
Really?
Yeah. So if you get a chance to buy geisha coffee.
Geisha, how do you spell geisha?
G-E-I-S-H-A.
Oh, so it's like the Japanese geisha.
Yeah, and most of it actually goes to Japan.
Oh, okay. You know,
it's usually bought through an auction system. And right now those auctions are going pretty high.
Can you get it in Australia, geisha coffee?
Well, yeah, you can get it from us.
From your cafes. So where are your cafes? How many cafes do you have still?
We've got 9 cafes. We have 4 cafes in Sydney, 1 cafe in Melbourne, 3 cafes in Brisbane, and we have 2 cafes in the US as well.
Right. Mm-hmm. And is the coffee labeled from a single source? Like can you choose which country you get your coffee from?
Yeah, you can choose. Yep. You can either buy the usual coffee, which is our blend, but you can also buy what we call single origins, or you can buy your Panama Geisha. It'll be a bit more expensive.
How much more expensive is the Panama Geisha?
Yeah, well, we sell it by the cup for around anywhere from $12 to $20 a cup, which is pretty significant for a coffee.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot, but, you know, look at
That's
beer.
That's the Grange Hermitage of coffee.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what I'm thinking. I think it's a good deal compared to those wines. Like you see the Grand Cru wine, you know, you'll buy those for like $100 a glass. Whereas with the top,
you might,
yeah. but with the top coffees of the world, you know, you can get the number one place coffee from Panama, number one geisha, and you can actually buy it for around $50 or $60 a cup. Which is actually a good deal because you can still afford. Well, you can still get it if you want it.
Would you really notice the difference in drinking it?
Boy, I sure hope so.
Yeah, well, you would for $50 a cup.
But it is remarkably different, and it's worth a taste now while you can still get it. Because I swear, in 5 years, that will not be available to the public.
So, do you think? I mean, obviously, there's been a massive since you started out. There's been a massive boom in coffee drinking. Everyone's like, it's huge now. Everyone's walking out in the street with you know, takeaway coffee cups in their hand.
Yeah.
Do you think we're at peak coffee now?
I think Australia's peak coffee. That's good. I think Australia is probably the most peak coffee place there is. Like, there's more people walking around the streets of Australia with a coffee cup in their hand than any other coffee country, or you know, maybe Finland has more, but it's not the same. Australia is at a very high consumption from cafes. Which we're blessed with. We're blessed with lots of amazing cafes and delicious coffee coming from those cafes, which makes things, we're blessed in Australia compared to the US, which has a less per capita number of fine coffee places to buy from. But as far as being peak coffee, you know, I still believe that coffee can grow further. I still think there's lots of instant coffee being drunk in Australia. And so there's room to grow for our sector, the specialty coffee sector, and I'm pretty confident that's going to keep on growing.
I think you're also engaged in a campaign about the price of coffee that growers get. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, you know, the price of coffee that growers get has historically been low. There's this price index called the C price. Which is based on the New York Stock Exchange price for commodity coffee. And all coffee is gauged against that C price. So right now, the C price is historically low, and it's been lower than ever this year. It's about 90 cents per pound. And I don't think that's good for the farmers, and it's not good for encouraging beautiful coffee to be grown. And so we try to protect our growers by giving them type of contract that measures the C price, but protects them against when the bottom falls out of the market. So we put a floor price in for their coffee. Like usually you'll buy coffee that's like C plus like $2 per pound. So we'll go C plus $2, but we'll protect it by saying if the C price falls below a certain point, we stop following the market down, and we stay on what we believe is a fair price for the farmer. And that's a big deal for coffee, because most people try to make hay while the sun shines when the C price bottoms out.
Does that potentially make your business uneconomic?
I don't think so. I think it strengthens us economically because it invests in the future of our growers, and we still charge the same price for a cup of coffee now as we did, you know, a year ago, whereas the C price, if that bottoms out, the farmer gets a lot less of that money.
So what percentage of a cup of coffee's price would go to the raw grower?
For us, I'd say the percentage of the price would be around, probably 40 or 45%.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the cost of goods for us.
That's for the unroasted coffee, 40 to 45%.
Yeah, maybe down to 35, but not much more.
Is that more than other
yes.
companies like you?
Yes, I think so.
Do?
Yeah, I think we. So
basically, you're saying that your margins are smaller than your competitors.
Yeah, but we really like to live in the long term on these things. It's not about the short term game for us, and you know, we're thinking in decades than in years ahead. So we're comfortable with not having as huge margins this year. You know, just as long as our growers. Can be there for the long term. If we don't invest in the growers, they'll stop growing coffee. They'll start growing avocados. or whatever else is trending right now. You know, avocados are huge. It's the avocado generation. We don't want them tearing up their coffee trees to plant avocados. No, we want to make sure there's enough coffee being grown for us as we grow into the future.
Great to talk to you, Will. Thanks.
Yeah, you too. Yeah, thanks. Cheers.
I've been talking to Will Young, who's the founder and CEO of Campos Coffee.